So this is Christopher Clark again in Port Solent, and it's the, do we say it's the 28th or 29th? 29th of October 2015, and Mum Jill Clark is with me again. We've got another some more relations to talk about today. We thought, in what is actually part five of what we've been doing over the years, we decided we'd take a look at your husband Ron's mother, Nellie Edith Smith, because not a lot is known about her, and I understand that she seemed to open up to you more than to a lot of other people in her life. Just before lunch, we were looking at her probate details and probate records, so it confirms that they were living at 63 The Fairway in Southgate, which I think they'd been for quite a long time. Yes. And you were telling me about the funeral, which seems a nice place to start from the back and work backwards.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting what you were saying about all the clerks who came to it.
I remember it very well. The funeral was held, obviously, on the premises there. Not the funeral, but the funeral get-together afterwards. And there were a lot of relatives there that I knew, and a lot of relatives there that I didn't.
Mm.
Some of hers and some of... granddad's, and partly because there was nobody else to do the catering, I did it, and assisted by one sister's daughter, who was about, I suppose, about 13 at the time, Lynette, and I brought it all up from Sussex with me in the car, and then we got it all sorted out at the fairway for them while they went. And there were two cousins of his, Frank and Phil, from Suffolk, who I had seen before. Very silent, rather dour men.
Right.
Sat very quietly. And Evelyn, of course, but nobody else from that side of the family seemed to have arrived. There were an awful lot of the Clark younger cousins. I'd seen the uncles, who mostly, as far as I could see, resembled Stanley Holloway. All very jolly men, with, like heavy built men with not fat but heavy built, and they had these quite big noses and all of the heavy chins, which Ron got a nice big chin on him, and I noticed it quite strongly. But what I noticed more than ever was that the fact that Grandad Clark was very blonde as a young man, and
yes, he was.
Ron was blonde until he was about 18, and all of the cousins were extremely dark haired and really dark eyes, but not just brown but really dark. It was quite a feature of them, and so there was a sort of jolly side from that, and then rather stayed quiet from Nana's side. And it all went off very well. At oral granddad, I didn't know if he was coming or going. Of course, as it was November, I was expecting my second son then.
Yeah.
It was arranged he should come and have Christmas with us. And then he went up and lived with Evelyn not very long after, in the new year. And they never came back because he sadly died of cancer in the August that year.
She died at the very end of November, didn't she, in
1960. Yes, yes. She'd had a stroke. Originally, but she had a massive stroke in the end, which took her, which was probably just as well, because there would have been no one to nurse her. It was just as well, really. It was just as well. It so often happens with a stroke, another one will follow. It's usually the big one.
Mm. So you said the two Smiths who were there.
Frank and Phil.
She, most of her brothers came and sisters
from,
had died.
What's the name of the place they came from? Smith.
Frank and Phil Smith, and they were from Thames, did you say? Okay.
Both bachelors.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because looking through her family tree here, most of her family, well, she outlived most of her family by a considerable margin.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like, yeah. Had you met many of the Smiths at this stage already? I think we've probably been up to Norwich a couple of times by then, hadn't we?
Mm.
See Arthur and the like.
I saw most of them. Uncle Horry, who'd been a headmaster.
Mm.
And I don't know that I saw any of the others, though. They're probably gone. Probably dead.
Mm. Mm.
Because you must remember that Nana was 69 or 70 when we got married.
Mm.
So that, of course, the likelihood of her having young brothers and sisters was a bit unlikely.
Yeah, I remember Grandad coming to stay with us that Christmas because we just bought that nice new stereo thing, and we were playing. My goodness, that's what he thought. We were playing brass band. We had a brass band LP, I think, bought probably specially for him. But I remember there was Pinky and Perky were all the range there, and I remember him singing along to "I've Got Sixpence, Jolly Jolly Sixpence" in a very low, gruff voice.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he probably was extremely very, very aggrieved at the time, but he didn't give that impression to me as a little kid. But, you know, I would only be about 9 or 10 then,
I think.
Well,
they didn't show their feelings.
No.
Yeah.
And I do remember Nana coming down to stay. Mm. I think they came down one Easter time or something.
Oh, yes.
And whenever I see on a packet the words "Tear Here," I always remember, because I don't think I could read at the time, but actually they were among the first words I ever learnt, because she gave me a packet of treats or Maltesers or something and when she arrived, and we sat down together, and she showed me these words, "Tear Here." And I always think of Nana whenever I see that on a packet. You say she mostly wore grey, but I distinctly remember she always wore brown, but perhaps I was completely wrong.
I don't really remember. I'd always grey and black, or sometimes a dark blue, or pale blue was the most she ever got to a bright colour. And it was always very high collars and nothing frivolous, you know. It just wasn't that sort at all.
No, I don't have a lot of memories. Well, I mean, I think I went to stay up there for a day once. I think Dad, you had something to do. So Dad dropped me off there while he went to work, and I spent the day. I don't remember Grandad being there much, actually, I remember. Yes. Nana took me on the tube up to Cockfosters. That was a treat. Mm. I can't remember what we did in Cockfosters. Probably had an ice cream and came back or something. Yeah. But I do remember they had a little television. They had a little television. Yes, they did. Because I watched.
I think that was probably one that Dad got them.
Yeah. I watched an episode of Heidi, I think. And I always remember that, because I never knew what happened afterwards. It sort of ended on a cliffhanger, and we went home. Of course, we didn't have a television at that stage, I don't think we did.
It's just very soft-spoken, very soft-speaking voice.
I do remember.
Very gentle person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she was always accusing Grandad, who, having been a sergeant major in the armour at one stage, the regular army, was inclined to shout, which she would never tolerate. "You are not on the parade ground now, Albert." He didn't realise he was shouting, but he was. He could shout too.
Yeah, I'm sure. But at the end of the last one we were talking about, when you came up from when you first got married, of course you actually lived upstairs at 63 Fairway.
Well, they very kindly. I mean, I never ceased to be grateful to them for them opening their house up for us, because we were going to live down in the Cookham area, and then all of a sudden it was all finished. So everybody said, "Oh, that's paid to the wedding then," but we decided otherwise. So we said, "Well, we're going to hit up against difficulties probably along the way in life. We may as well face them together." So we decided we would, and we something went, and as usual, something does turn up. But they immediately said, "Well, you better come here." And there was it was quite a big house. There was plenty of room too, and it helped them out tremendously because we paid most of the rent then, which helped them out. But we changed Ron's bedroom into a very small kitchen, which obviously just had a stove in and a table and things. And then we had to bring cold water up from downstairs in a great big jug, hot drinking water. We had to put a big board over the bath and have a basin and wash up with that and do the washing in that as well. And there was a separate loo which we could put the washing up water down. It seems quite incredible these days that people didn't think any. You know, that's how you had to be. We had an electric meter, and I kept the upstairs and all the stairs and that kind of thing done for Nana, so she didn't have to do that, having the elderly. But they did, they really fell, they really put themselves out. And Grandad decorated the kitchen. I think it was in a rather, rather shade of green that I perhaps wouldn't have preferred. Yet the thought that he'd done it was so kind.
Green kitchen.
You know, we managed. I say Ron was, first of all, he was working locally with a friend of his, you know, doing freelance work, and then he was taken on the inside to IPC, and then he was travelling up to London every day.
Yeah.
And then by then I had got a job up in London as well, part-time. And
Is that the theatre agency?
No, the artist agency.
Artist agency,
last night. And until son Christopher was on the way. Continued until I, for a while, and then we didn't actually move from there until Christopher was just over a year. Down to Horsham.
Oh, so you were there for the best part of 3 years then?
I think we did most of the garden and things, except the little that Grandad did.
Was Grandad still going out to work? Then, of course, yes, he's, we talk about 1950,
aren't we? He was only in his early 60s,
you see.
Where Nana was, it was 70 by the time we married. And she was 9 years older than him.
So Nana, Nelly, was at home most of the time, was she? Popped out to shops or something?
Yeah, she used to go to some sort of old people's thing. Forget what it was. And she was a bit knocked when Grandad got to the age where he could join. So she quite enjoyed going on her own. She always won all the competitions.
Oh, right.
Yeah, she was very good at crosswords. I think it was the same as Dad. All the quizzes and things, she always won them all.
So when she was there, though, were you able to kind of chat to her and things?
When you were born, every afternoon at about 3:30, I went down and made a cup of tea for us both and let her have a cuddle, which she liked. And it, you know, gained a great bond there, and she with her grandson, and they were very proud of. Very proud of. Yeah. It was nice. We would go out for, you know, shopping or whatever, and always came back to make this. Well, I suppose it was probably 4 o'clock more, half past three. And that was sacrosanct that she had this, except the day that she went to this old people's club.
Right.
That was our time, and she did open up to me an awful lot about her life in the as a nurse and out in the First World War.
I remember you story you always tell about her was when you were expecting me, you were sort of sitting there, sort of.
Oh yes. Well,
feeling the pain.
I came down with the usual large. Great big canister thing for water, and I wasn't feeling very bright and fainted. I came to see that she was still sitting knitting in the chair, and I sort of struggled to my feet. And she said, "Well, you'll have to expect that sort of thing now. But if you have nursed people in the desert and you know, it's under extreme conditions, and done your midwifery in the Gorbals, somebody fainting." On account of having a child, is nothing. No fuss was made whatsoever. No, I never, neither Dan or I ever expected any. In fact, as a child, he said it was rather better to not say that you weren't well because the cure was worse than the thing.
Iodine and horse liniment, I think he said, were her main cures.
Exactly. And didn't have a, he had no sympathy at all with people that imaginary or ones like that. I think having seen some of the things that she had to do, it's not surprising.
Yeah, she does seem to have had a tough time. She was born in Battersea, which is where Ron was born.
I didn't realise that.
You know, her father seems to have moved the family down there from Suffolk for whatever reason, we can find that out. But he died in 1887 when she was only six. At which point I think they all up sticks and went back to live in Bungay in Suffolk. And it looks like her mother, who was Eleanor, looks like she went into service and she was brought up by her grandparents in Suffolk, looks like it. But she's not there for very long. It seemed that she went. Yeah, she's 1901. She's back. She's in Finchley, and then her occupation, from about the age of 21, is nurse.
She ultimately went to, is it St Thomas's, isn't she? Because we've got a big photograph of her.
St Thomas's Hospital.
Yeah.
Right.
She was a sister because Ron, we have some photographs of them with big old wards. And she had this hat with this enormous great wings on it. And there was a television programme actually many, many years later. And Ron, I remember Ron jumping up in there and saying, "That's Mum." It's on this ward. So she acquired, you know, the status of being a sister. But she also did, as I say, apart from nursing in the First World War, which must have been grim, she did a lot of private nursing, mostly for the Quaker people, the Cadburys and the Roundtrees. And,
well, they were all in Birmingham, though. Was she up to... Was she living
at
nurse?
She did that, but that's who she did the nursing for. And she ultimately, the last year of her nursing was in England somewhere, but that's when she nursed Albert.
That was in Kensington, wasn't it? Deal or somewhere?
Yes, badly injured. And she nursed him.
Yeah, I found a record for a nursing services sister in the Queen Alexandra's Imperial Military Nursing Service. Otherwise known as Queen Alexandra's Royal Army Nursing Corps. So that was in 1902. So
She was in another war before the First World War, but not, it wouldn't have been the Boer War, it would have been one, was it Crimea or something?
Well, there were several Balkan wars involving Turkey and so forth.
And she was in Palestine for a long time. So that's when she learned the language.
She spoke Arabic?
Mm.
Gosh. Mm. Yeah. Oh, did she tell you what she was doing there in Palestine?
Nursing.
Well, she just got posted out there. She didn't choose to go out there, presumably.
Well, you heard about the adventure she had, too. Well, it wasn't an adventure, it was horrible. Because they were going somewhere or other, I mean, a whole lot of them, and they got captured by the Turks.
Mm.
They're not good people to be captured by.
Mm.
And they were on board ship, and there was a young, I presume a Palestinian kind of boy, or young teenager, and they were going to kill him. And they got together, the nurses, dressed him up in a uniform and passed him off as a nurse.
Good Lord.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, they had headdresses then that covered their heads. And it saved his life. She never had a good word to say for the Turks. Most unpleasant people.
How long was she held captive for, do you know?
And she didn't say, actually.
Or how she was released.
I don't know whether the British Army came to the rescue or what. Because she was on board ship when this happened. They were taking them somewhere else, or whether somebody interceded it, I don't know. But she got away, obviously.
Mm.
It must have been very frightening, because they weren't averse to killing people off, indiscriminately.
No.
The Geneva Convention didn't really prevent from doing anything.
You said she also did some nursing training in Glasgow in the Gorbals.
Oh, she did her Gorbals.
Yeah.
Only her midwifery in the Gorbals. Said that was quite an experience because it was very, very rough district then, which would have been around about early 1900s. But she said because you had this nurse's uniform with a cloak and so forth, no one ever touched a nurse, not in those days. There were certain things that these men would not, they all respected the nurses. They said you could climb over the drunks to get to a case. There's some staircase of dead drunk on the stairs, but they wouldn't touch you. Mm. Sometimes the conditions were appalling.
Would she have been based with some kind of Quaker mission or something, or a church thing under?
I don't know what it would have been, because in those days there was no NHS or anything like that.
No.
Nowhere near. But most of the nursing maternity was started originally from Florence Nightingale and people allied to her. They started up various different contingencies and then trained and went to, they were just sent to different areas.
Yeah.
But it was quite a rough area to have been sent to. She was quite capable of looking after herself.
Are there any other stories you can remember telling you about? Did she ever mention her childhood or?
No, not really.
Mm-hmm.
No. No, she didn't.
Perhaps because she might not even have had one, really.
No, she hadn't got a mother.
Mm.
No, she didn't, really.
Mm.
No.
And how long did she keep the nursing going, or did she give up when she got married?
Well, you weren't allowed to be married.
And be a nurse?
In those days, if you were a teacher, that was it. Career was finished. Anything. Mm. Unless, of course, you were sort of in a factory or something, then perhaps you did, but not if you were in any of those sort of things. You gave it up immediately. And then, of course, she had Evelyn, so... there were no creches and that sort of thing, nothing for mothers to look after the children, whatever.
Yes, they got married in December 1918, then, so a little bit after the war had finished. Mm. And then Evelyn came along 11 months later in October, 18th of October. So she's just had her 96th birthday, Evelyn. Amazing.
Mm. And she had another little boy in between. Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know what his name
was. Edward. Edward was his name, apparently.
I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember.
So that's what it says on the
birth certificate. He only lived a few hours, I think.
Yeah. Yes, he was born in December.
Mm.
1921, and he dies, days later.
Mm.
I don't know in what circumstances. Yes, and then, And Dad comes along about two and a half years later, in August 1923.
Mm.
And they've moved. Yes, they seem to live, when they got married, they seem to go and live in South London.
Mm.
Which is not where any of the other clerks were, but it's perhaps she still had family in that area. I have to have a look, because I mean that's...
She didn't mention them, actually. I didn't even know she'd been born in Battersea. I thought she was born, in Suffolk, but she wasn't.
Well, the families were, but her birth records say she's born in Battersea.
Mm.
But they weren't there for very long.
Mm. Well, that's probably why.
Yeah. No, they're all definitely based in Bungay.
If Grandad could have stayed in the army, as he was in the regular army, and had gone right through... he would have been all right, but because he was so badly wounded, that was it. And it was a terrible time for men coming out then.
Yep.
And no sessions of helping them, either mentally or physically, really. Then you're on your own. Unless you had some sort of a profession behind you before you went... just had to get whatever was going.
Well, that's right. I mean, they sent them out there to do a job and called them heroes, but quietly forgot about it as soon as they got back and just get on with them. A lot of them went into crime, of course, because they were trained to kill other people and do nasty things to people, so that's what a lot of them seem to have done.
Mm.
So, in the absence of any other help, but... I don't think Albert went into...
I can still remember they were out selling matches in the street after the First World War. That's terrible, isn't it?
Yeah. I think Grandad kept up some kind of military involvement, and wasn't he train young cadets and things?
Yes, and then he went back into that, and he was really loved.
Mm-hmm.
All those boys adored him. All his contemporaries all thought the world of him.
Okay, so that's...
youngsters.
Yeah.
Mm. And he could command discipline without having to resort to any sort of violence. He just... people respected him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.